25.8 to play. Wow. It is a three-point St. Peter's lead. 65-61, 12 seconds left. Ivy has to hurry. Jump shot, good! A three! One-point game with 8 seconds to go. Eddard at the free throw line. St. Peter's leads by two. They are riding a Cinderella wave. 67-64, 4 seconds left.
I don't like the foul, remember.
Ivy for the tie! Off the rim, and it's over! This miracle run continues for St. Peter's!
You can't keep me cooped up in here, okay? I am a peacock! You gotta let me fly!
And those flightless birds are en route to the Elite Eight. For the first time in NCAA history, a 15 seed has won 3 games in the NCAA tournament. Wow. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. This is Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic, our last show before the Final Four. And Michelle, we get to react to what is arguably the greatest Cinderella story in the history of this event. The underdog of all underdogs, the flightless bird to end all flightless birds, the disco turkeys, a.k.a. the peacocks of St. Peter's, not only has taken down 2-seed Kentucky, 7-seed and 30-win team Murray State, but now they have taken down 3-seed and number 2 offense in college basketball, the Purdue Boilermakers.
Absolutely incredible. I was sitting at my counter because the laptop was going to die and my streaming on my TV wasn't working. And I'm like, I need to see this game. I need to see this game. And you know what? I just have no words, honestly. I was like shaking because I was so excited for this team. And it is so hard not to root for this as we're watching the replay right here on the TV. It is so hard to not root for this St. Peter's Peacocks team. And on National Peacock Day, Nick, our intern, texted me right after the show yesterday and was like, look at this. And it was a screenshot and it was like, what is National Peacock Day in 2022? March 25th.
The day they played Purdue in the Sweet 16. It was destiny. They weren't going to lose on National Peacock Day. By show of hands in the studio and on the stream, how many of us knew there was a National Peacock Day to begin with?
Every day is a day.
Every day is a day.
That's a negative.
That's a negative for those in radio land. You are not seeing anybody's hands raised because I did not know that was a thing. Most of us did not know that was a thing, but it is a thing. And on National Peacock Day, the Peacocks go to the Elite Eight. But Michelle, here's the wild thing, or here's the thing that I'm still trying to figure out. Like, they played an elite level offense, and when you play Purdue, a lot of the times, like, you have to score in the 70s or 80s to beat them. They held Purdue to 64 points. It's a team that's scoring over 80 plus a game, and they're up
with a guy who's 7'4" under the basket in the paint for them.
And then when he goes to the bench, they bring in a 6'11 guy who's one of the best, who I think is the best passing big man in college basketball, who had a hell of a game last night. But it wasn't enough to beat St. Peter's.
I say yesterday, Elijah? We were on the 6 last night. We were talking about this game as the game kind of kicked off and we were closing out the show. I said, so much about this tournament is all the extra noise, right? We can look on the paper, Kentucky statistically, player-wise, a better team than St. Peter's. We'll have NBA players on their team. Murray State, better team. Nobody knew about this St. Peter's team until a couple weeks ago, until March Madness began. And you talk about all the pressure and all the eyes on this game. And look at Purdue. They had so much riding on their back, right? They've never won a national championship, so obviously that's on their back as well. They also, earlier this year, for the first time, were ranked number one. That's insane. Purdue's been a great basketball program for a long time.
And this was like the year. If they were to ever do it, this felt like the year they could do it.
And you think about just the pressure that's on them, like, oh my God, we're going to be team number 3. That they're going to – you looked on the bench at the end of the game and they're all – you could see it right on their faces. And there was this great little Twitter clip. I'll try to tweet it out right now on my personal Twitter account, but it was of Doug.
Doug Eater.
I always want to say Eckert.
The star of this tournament, almost.
Yeah,
individually.
I mean, if you don't just love that stash, but there's a close-up video of him when he's at the foul line. It's like 51-52, right? Which is a couple minutes left in the game, and you see him mouth to himself. It's go time, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about the swagger.
I think that might have been when they were down, because they were down with 4:42 left. They were down 56-52. And according to KenPom, at that point in the game, they had an 8.7% chance of winning. Because at that point, like, Purdue, like, they got back-to-back baskets from Travion Williams. Yeah. Like, Purdue finally discovered that, hey, if you give the ball down to your behemoths down low, they can score the basketball at will if you just, I don't know, let them or feed them. And it did feel like Purdue kind of figured it out a little bit. Like, they were getting some stops and they were able to get together some buckets. Got up four with 4:42 left. And, like, Purdue had the ball. I think Jaden Ivey got turned over. And then that's how that foul happened. But he did, yeah. You could definitely read his lips. He's like, it's go time, baby. And from then on.
Locked in.
And like, they did it again. These dudes did it again. It's incredible. Like, and a lot of it, like, defies, like, ways you typically win basketball games. Like, a lot of times you have to shoot better than the other team, right? Well, they had an effective field goal shooting of 4:44 last night. That is incredibly low. A lot of teams don't win with an effective field goal shooting of 44.4%. Especially against Purdue, who on the season is typically shooting in the high 50s, you know. Purdue was held 47 last night. The turnover battle. St. Peter's actually, that might be, if you look back at it, like what won them this game. I mean, they only turned the ball over 8 times, and Purdue ended up turning it over 14-6 from Jaden Ivey.
As far as being effective in executing these plays that Shaheem Holloway set up, these guys are on their X's and O's, right? You can see how great coaching can allow these teams. I mean, these aren't players. If you were to look at the teams, they play in like a high school gym.
Yeah, they play in one of the smaller conferences in America.
And for them to go toe-to-toe with a Kentucky who has every resource ever in the book, all of these elite-level coaches and staffs and physical trainers and nutritionists and essentially these players. I mean, I went to Kentucky. They're treated like royalty.
Yeah.
And Shaheem Holloway has come in and is basically just like, we're from Jersey. We're tough guys. Like, we're just playing basketball. We're just having fun.
Uh-huh.
And I just, like, can't even put it into words. Like, I remember saying last night on the show, I don't know how they're going to do it, but it's going to happen. I can't explain how at all, right?
Right,
but
exactly.
They're just going to do it.
And if I would have told you, like, last night when the game tipped off, say, and I told you, Purdue will end up grabbing almost 42% of their misses. Like, Purdue has an off-shooting night, but they grab 42% of those missed shots.
My chair almost just fell.
As you almost messed around and found out what that chair is about. But I told you, this Purdue team, as good as they are offensively, they were going to be able to get 42% of their second chances on possessions. You'd have been like, they probably covered that 13.5 spread, right?
Exactly. All those second chance points. I was getting nervous for a while. I'm like, St. Peter's, you can't keep letting up. Because I am the biggest St. Peter's fan ever.
You're on the bandwagon.
Oh,
yeah.
I am.
I think, yeah, fully. America has gotten on the bandwagon here.
Also, I would just like to say,
everyone,
because obviously I'm a Kentucky homer, put some respect to my Kentucky Wildcats, because
this makes them look a lot better now.
This is no scrub St. Peter's team after what they have just done. And Kentucky was the only team to take them to overtime.
That's true. And what I talked about yesterday on the six, I said, you know, what St. Peter's will do is, like, they dare you to beat them from the free throw line. Like, they foul a lot.
Yes.
They dare officials to call fouls. Like, they're one of the bottom in the league in defensive free throw rate. Like, 41% for almost every two shots their opponents take, they shoot one free throw for every two shots. That is an insanely high rate. Like I said, bottom 10 in college basketball. Purdue was one of the top free throw rate teams in college basketball. Zach Edey himself draws about 7 fouls per 40 minutes, which is top 10 in college basketball. Last night, instead of having that 41% free throw rate, Purdue was at 24 St. Peter's didn't foul them. St. Peter's shot more free throws than Purdue. That hasn't been their MO all season long. That's not how St. Peter's has won games all season long. It just didn't happen last night. Purdue has banked on getting the free throw line all season long. They played a team that is willingly going to hack the hell out of you, and they just couldn't get to the line. St. Peter's best defender did foul out of the game with like 5 minutes to go last night.
Which was scary for them.
Yeah, he's a two-time MAAC player, defensive player of the year. Fouled out. And they still didn't get to the line enough as St. Peter's did.
Well, and Purdue also shot themselves in the foot with some late fouls. And
the Mason Gillis one at the end, because they had the stop. They had the stop they needed down one, or down two. They were down two at that point.
How about when there was 30 seconds left, right, and St. Peter's is inbounding the ball, and Purdue just couldn't catch them.
They trapped in the corner, and it's like they're trying to get that turnover.
Yeah.
And all St. Peter's has to do is make maybe one or two tough passes, but they made like those one or two tough passes and broke the trap, broke a press, and was able to milk off like 10 whole seconds before Purdue finally fouled.
Exactly. It was like 27, and then it was like 14. And that was a huge play.
Massive.
They could have got that stop. They could have got a turnover or just got him to the foul line.
Mm-hmm. And that's the crazy thing, too. We talk about pressure in these situations. In that moment, St. Peter's is feeling a lot of pressure.
Yep.
Because now you have to inbound the ball. You got to be able to make two or three good passes against a oncoming trap. And all you got to do is take care of the ball. But in that moment, that is very, very difficult.
And they're just calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah, that was a huge clutch play, like just getting the ball inbounds.
And making that pass from the trap, too, because they did the one thing. They broke the cardinal sin of inbounding the ball against a trap, and that's throw it to the corner.
Right.
Threw it to the corner, got trapped, and found a way to make two good passes to get out of it and milked off, like you said, Michelle, 13 seconds.
Who did he throw it to? He threw it to Doug.
Threw it to Doug. The 87% free throw shooter. And
don't foul him.
It was go time. At that moment in time, it was go time. And then he put him on the free throw line, scored, and the rest is history. The St. Peter's Peacocks are going to the Elite Eight.
They're doing it again.
My biggest question, though, is this the most unfathomable run in the NCAA tournament, the most unpredictable, unfathomable run we have ever seen in this tournament? We'll answer that next here on Courtside with Campbell Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's Courtside, Campbell Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. Jared Cassidy spinning the tunes here. Bad news on that front. Taylor Hawkins, Foo Fighters drummer.
Terrible.
Rest in peace. Died at 50 last night. Great song, great band, all-timer. I don't know if they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a group. I don't know enough about that, but they should be because this is a top 10 like musical group for me.
So where he joined the band in 1997. Foo Fighters.
Upon the band's, I guess, formation.
Yep.
Yeah.
24 years ago. It's exactly the year I was born. It's crazy.
Wild.
What a legend. Rest in peace.
Been performing as long as Michelle has been alive. I'm sure that makes a lot of people listening to this feel very old. Like I said, Courtside, Campbell Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And I asked the question before we went to break, is this St. Peter's run the most improbable run we have seen in our lifetime? We've seen 11 seeds make the Final Four, Loyola Chicago making the Final Four in 2018 is up there. You look back on it, Oral Roberts' two wins in the NCAA tournament last year was up there because it seemingly came out of nowhere. Florida Gulf Coast in 2015 or 2013,
oh, yeah.
The other 15 seed to make it to a Sweet 16 has got to be up there as well. In terms of 11 seeds too, VCU, an 11 seed in 2011, going from the first four to the final four, the first team to do that. And then, of course, the OG one to me is the George Mason run in 2006, rather, where they go as an 11 seed all the way to the Final Four before losing the eventual national champion, Florida. The only other one I can think of to compete with this is technically 1985, 8-seed Villanova did win a national championship as an 8-seed, beating 1-seed Georgetown. What's one of the better individual upsets in the history of this tournament. But, Michelle, when you think about all of those magical runs in this tournament, in terms of improbability, this St. Peter's one might have to be the most that no one has seen coming, right?
Elijah, I completely agree. And when you're naming off all these other teams that were 11 seeds, you know, 8 seed, you touched on schools like Villanova. Look at all the like, you know who Villanova is. I think the difference between this one is that nobody even knew where St. Peter's was in the country. Nobody mm-hmm. had even heard of this school. And I think that's what makes it so crazy, I guess you could say, so unpredicted. I mean, you knew about George Mason. You knew about VCU. Mm-hmm. You knew about Loyola Chicago. These were bigger schools that you had at least heard of.
Loyola Chicago did win a championship in the 60s.
Exactly.
A very historic one, yeah.
And yeah, it might have been a very, very long time ago, but I think the just most amazing thing about this one is that they're not just making this run, they're putting their entire school on the map.
It's amazing what this does for your school.
First off, it's going to help with resources. It's going to help with applications. Like, mm-hmm. think about all these kids who are now in high school, right? And they're not somebody who's going to go like a high Division I school. Well, now St. Peter's might be – they're going to be getting some great talent in that. This is going to help them in their league. I mean, Iona usually pretty much dominates that. And you had a tweet last night that if St. Peter's didn't make a run in their conference tournament and beat Iona – they wouldn't have been in this
God, that's tournament. The craziest thing. That I think when I look at all of the obstacles this team had to go through to get to this point, you mentioned a lot of the obvious ones. Being a small school, I don't think they have an enrollment of over 2,000. Being in a really small conference. Well, they also started off 3-6 this year, and then in conference play got swept by Iona, the team that I thought was almost a safe assumption.
Thought we were going to get a Patino, Cal Perry.
Exactly. Like, it seemed destined for that, right? Like, it seemed destined. Iona went to it last year. I pushed Alabama to the brink in the first round last season, and then beat Alabama in that tournament in Orlando in November this season. This Iona team looked unstoppable in that conference. This Iona team swept this St. Peter's team in the regular season. And then Iona, after easily clinching the one seed in that conference regular season, got beat in the first round of that conference tournament to the 9th seed in that conference in Ryder. Clearing the way for St. Peter's to not have to play them in the conference tournament. Who knows what happens if Ryder doesn't pull off the unthinkable there? That one domino led to what we're seeing right now, which is the most improbable run in the history of this tournament.
Yeah, I think for me it's absolutely one of the most improbable runs. Just not everything you said. And then in addition to that, like, to put this in perspective for some people, this is such a small school.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not seen the pictures on Twitter and social media, go look up what their basketball gym looks like.
Incredible.
Go look up how many students that go to the school. Go look up their basketball budget. Go look up their athletics budget.
It's not a ton.
Do they have a football team? I don't even know.
Oh, there's no way. With an enrollment like that, there's no way. Oh, you know what they don't have, too? It's funny because I found this out the hard way. I was trying to. So on Darren, Donick, and Chase, we book, like during these weeks, we love to book guests that are the play-by-play radio voices for these teams, right? Like last year, we had Abilene Christian's play-by-play voice on whenever they upset Texas. And they were getting ready to play UCLA in the second round. Well, on Thursday afternoon, I emailed the head of communications for St. Peter's Athletic Department, and I asked, hey, I can't find who your play-by-play man or woman is, on your website. Would you be able to help me get in contact with them? We'd love to have them on our show. And he responds with, we don't have a radio team. Most teams in our conference don't, but thank you for asking. They don't have a radio team. Most, like Abilene Christian had a radio team that covered every game for them. Most D1 schools do. And this team does not have a radio or TV voice. Nothing. Nothing like that. No one covers them.
Well, exactly. And people can say, well, that doesn't matter what happens on the field. Or happens on the field. Happens on the court. we're in football talk here. We're all over the place. But at the end of the day, it's so many factors working against this St. Peter's team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, they... Like, I'm honestly speechless. Like, I was thinking, like, what am I going to say tomorrow morning, like, after the St. Peter's team wins? And to be honest, I was speechless for a second because there are so many factors that are working against the St. Peter's team of just facilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Money going into the program, traveling ability. They had to The NCAA sent a bus for their cheerleaders to come to the tournament.
The only reason they were going to be able to get there is because the NCAA does that for all the teams, or else they wouldn't have been able to do that.
Also, I saw a tweet today because now just everybody's researching this team and looking into this team and everything like that. But their players run their St. Peter's men's basketball social media account. Like that, like that is a job for people, a full-time career to be a digital manager for these Division I programs. Like the amount of effort and work to just highlight these teams and to get these players known for NIL deals. And it actually makes me really happy that Doug on their team, mustache guy, you've seen his face all over, he got a NIL deal with Buffalo Wild Wings because of this tournament and because they've been able to make this run. There's no way you would have been able to do that if it weren't for this tournament. I mean, Kentucky has a guy, TJ Beisner was my former boss there. He is on their staff now and is specifically in charge of NIL deals and make sure these players aren't getting taken advantage of and helps them get opportunities. But they're Kentucky, so people are coming to them like crazy.
All the time, yeah. It requires someone to be a full-time monitor of those kind of situations.
Well, and they're also playing for their life. These guys are not going to be in the NBA.
No. Like, it's funny like how appropriate the term one shining moment is for a lot of these guys. Like, Doug Eadert is not going to play in the NBA.
Nope.
A lot of these dudes are not going to be playing in the – Daryl Banks – you will not see in the NBA. Might play overseas, maybe might play in the G League because of the recognition he got from this tournament. But his maximum earning power, like the peak of his popularity and this like this group's time in the spotlight is like right now. Like this is it. This is their shining moment. Like this is when they're going to be the most profitable when it comes to basketball in their lives. It's really cool to see them not just like get rewarded for like an NIL deal for Buffalo Wild Wings, but just to get this type of recognition. These guys aren't going to be on SportsCenter like every day again.
Ever again. Probably, unless they do an interview. Elijah, we've got looks like you got some Twitter interaction from your just, is this the best Cinderella run of all time? Essentially what we're talking about. Gover said they officially eclipsed George Mason to me. I know George Mason got further, but the Peacocks are a lower seed and nobody knew they existed 3 weeks ago. So essentially just exactly what we were talking about. And then Matthew Taylor on Twitter, got to be near the top. They're beating all the top teams. And I mean, and everybody's like unreal, 100% just kind of tweeting back at you. And that's, I think the biggest thing for me is all these other Cinderella stories we've heard of. Mm-hmm. We knew their school. We knew their team. We knew them coming into the tournament at least like, okay, you can look at their records and stuff like this. But this one just came out of nowhere.
It is pretty remarkable. And the thing is, too, like when George Mason as an 11 seed came in, I think they might have even gotten an at-large because they were a really good regular season team. Like that that specific team didn't have to win their conference tournament. They got an at-large because they were really, really good in the regular season. I'll go ahead and double-check that because I can't remember for sure. It was very young. But the VCU in 2011 already had some NCAA tournament shine in 2007 when Eric Maynard hit a shot to beat Duke. Crazy upset on that one. Then, of course, they lost in the next round. But, yeah, George Mason, did not win their conference tournament the year they went to the Final Four. They got upset by Hofstra. 58-49, got in as an at-large because they won their regular season easily and definitely had some like key wins in the regular season too. And we're already a really good team. Like that was the number like 15 defense in college basketball that year. That was like they had like a knockout punch. You look at like Florida Gulf Coast, they had a knockout punch because they were a top 15 two-point shooting team in college basketball. Oral Roberts last year was a top three-point shooting team in college basketball, and they shot the three ball at a rate that most teams don't. But this team doesn't have one of those. They don't have that one thing where you're just like, they just do this better than anybody else, and they don't like stick to that identity. They're like a chameleon. They can blend in anywhere. They can beat you doing a lot of different things. Last night, they did it without even grabbing a ton of offensive rebounds or even keeping Purdue off the glass. Like, that's the thing Purdue does best. And they still they play the two best offensive rebounding teams in the country and beat them and not while not having to keep them off the boards either.
Well, and is it crazy for me to say, and who would have ever thought I'd be saying this, and people can maybe still not believe in them, but could we see them make a Final Four run or potentially win this entire thing?
We'll find out because they're going to play North Carolina on Sunday. North Carolina with a crazy win last night as well against UCLA. We'll break that down and we'll take your thoughts too. 615-737-1025. Call us, text us. Is this the most improbable run in college basketball or maybe even sports that we have ever seen? And do we think they have a chance against North Carolina? We'll take your thoughts too. Again, 615-737-1025. Call, text, chime in. We'd like to hear what you think as you're listening to Courtside of Kamel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Improbability. Not just a math equation, but it's what we've seen in real life. That this team, the St. Peter's Peacocks, a 15 seed, is now halfway to a national championship. That is something I would consider improbable. It's something I would consider to be the most improbable run in the history of collegiate sports, maybe sports in general. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. This is Courtside with Kamel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we're just trying to figure out anything about, like, this school. Like, Michelle didn't know about this school.
And I'm from upstate.
She's...
Oh, my gosh. My first
view. You Joe Rex rode so hard. Oh, you just Joe'd so hard. Oh, you had a good point, too. You're like, I'm from upstate. I didn't even know that the Peacocks were in New Jersey. She's getting booed behind the glass.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
I just
my goodness.
I just went so hard. No. And it's funny because I just texted our group message of Robbie and Joe and I, and I just texted them and said, could this team actually do this? And Joe responded. So I'm reading that as I'm screaming into the microphone that I'm even from upstate New York, and I didn't even know about this team, and I was just – that was a full blast mute. Okay, so that was bad, but now we're unmuted.
Man. Shades of Joe Rexroad carrying over onto the weekends.
Could they actually win this? Like, I'm done. I didn't really doubt them only because I was, like, more of a sour fan towards Kentucky. And then I was like, you know what? I was a fan where I was like, you know what? They beat us, so I want them to beat everybody. Thinking in the back of my head, it's probably not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But then also having that little glimpse of faith because it is March and anything can happen, literally. I mean, the thing is, when you're watching this team, like you said, Elijah, they're not statistically, it's not like they have some crazy stat where they're just like unreal at shooting threes or offensive rebounds or
nothing that jumps out.
Nothing that jumps out. But I will say one thing that jumps out to me is the coaching and just breaking it down to the actual X's and O's of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think this says something about just maybe not recruiting, but just fantastic coaching by Shaheem Holloway? I mean, if you look at the guys on his team, like, yeah, like, okay, they're fine players, but just the ability to execute.
And scout the way they have, too. Like they're finding ways to win that other teams haven't done to these other teams. Like, they kind of succeeded these offensive rebounds to Purdue. They kind of gave up these offensive rebounds to Kentucky, and those are one of the reasons why those are two of the best offenses in college basketball. But they rough you up, like they're physical, like they have this feeling amongst them that you're not going to out tough them, you're not going to punk these guys. They're not scared of you because the Kentucky
they're
is on
Jersey
your jersey
boys.
Yeah,
they have great chemistry though, too.
And
that
exactly.
comes from the coaching, like Michelle said. I mean, that mm-hmm. that stems down from that. I don't know. I just think that I'm with Michelle. I think they can go on they've already been on a run, mm-hmm. but I think they can take it.
They've already beat two teams that were
two of the best offenses in college basketball.
You beat Purdue, the Boilermakers, and that's tough. How many times have we talked about, too? Like, Purdue is like, I mean, they're just extraordinary in what they do. They're tall. They play well. But just seems like Peacock's got the chemistry, man.
Listen,
quit Purdue all year long.
And I know that people, like, I know Kentucky lost in the first round, and honestly, the last 2 weeks weren't the best basketball they played, but we saw that team beat Kansas by 20 this year, beat UNC by almost 20 points this year.
Yeah.
We've seen them beat Tennessee by almost 30. Like, and yeah, they had some losses along the way, but I can't even put into words how insane and incredible this is. I personally, I've had this conversation with people who are like, we want to see a Duke UNC Final Four, yada, yada, all this stuff, mm-hmm. because it's Coach K's last year.
Would be pretty cool.
would be pretty cool because that's a whole nother story in college basketball right now that, oh my God, could Duke do it again? But then on the other hand, it's like, oh my God, could St. Peter's be the team to knock Duke out to send Coach K into retirement? We thought it'd be Izzo. Could Shaheem Holloway be the coach
be the one to
send Coach K into retirement? And it's like the turnover of coaches, right? Like younger generation type thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Elijah, what do you think? Do you actually think that we could see this happen? Do we think that they could cut the Nets down or at least make it to the Final Four?
I can't talk myself into it because, like, these things always end, right? Like, they always have to end somewhere. Someone always pushes the envelope a little further, but, like, you never know. I just cannot figure out how they're continuing to win these games, and that's what makes it so hard to say no to that question. Like, it's hard for me to give you a definitive no. I don't, like, there's no way they're going to actually do it because I can't prove that they actually can't do it because the two teams that are two of the five best offenses in college basketball just bent to their will in those games. I mean, like, they went toe-to-toe with Kentucky and even in overtime period in, like, multiple parts of that game where it's like, okay, Kentucky's got a multi-possession lead. This is where they pull away. Last night, I was like, Purdue's got a multiple possession lead a couple times in this game. This looks like where they could pull away. They're figuring out Travion Williams can score at will. This is where they pull away. Oh, they gave the ball to Zach Edey down low. He can do that whenever he wants. They might be figuring something out. This is how they pull away. Oh, they can't grab a rebound against Purdue right now. This is how Purdue pulls away. But they don't, and no one has in this stupid tournament so far. It's incredible. So I can't really definitively say no, even though, like, I know damn well they can't win it all, right? Like, they can't. Like, Duke's still in it. Arkansas is still in it. Kansas is a one seed that's still in it. Like,
but then I counter you and I say, they beat Kentucky. They beat Purdue.
It's like, can they keep doing it again? Like, that's the crazy thing.
And we've seen cracks in those. I mean, there's cracks in every program, right? Mm-hmm. And a part of me is like, how much of this is mental also, right? They're playing these huge programs. And I know at the end of the day, it's how you perform on the court. But how much of this is mental in this St. Peter's team just being able to get under the skin of these elite programs that have a chip on their shoulder? Like, you know, we've won national championships. Like, this is in our blood. We're a blue blood team. Like, this is what we were born to do. This is what we were meant to do. This is what we've been preparing for all season long. We're going to make a run in the tournament. We're Duke. We're UNC, mm-hmm. right? Like, those programs are bred for that type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, just it's funny because, like, their next game is against North Carolina. North Carolina has six national championships. A lot of them recent. This is the school that produced Michael Jordan, that produced Vince Carter, Jerry Stackhouse, Rasheed Wallace. I mean, you can reel off, you can make several great starting fives that went on to be NBA stars that came from North Carolina. But St. Peter's, like, Jared from behind the glass, like, was giving me some stats. Jared, go ahead and reel off, like, the amount of sport, the enrollment that St. Peter's has and the amount of sports they have.
All right, so we're going to start with enrollment. It looks like this was last updated in 2019. So 2,316 undergraduate students, Jersey City, New Jersey. Then we're going to go to the sports here. We have men's sports. We have baseball, basketball, cross country, golf, soccer, swimming and diving, track and field. Women's sports, basketball, cross country, soccer, softball, swimming and diving, track and field, and volleyball. Nowhere on that did I mention football. So,
which is a revenue sport?
Yeah, revenue sport.
A massive revenue sport.
But this run could help them generate. Who knows? Maybe 10 years from now, we could see a football program at St. Peter's.
Wow. Maybe they could win the Natty.
Who knows?
Football is a different story. Football is a different story. But this is why we love basketball. This is why we love March, because the format of this tournament and the quick turnaround from the games and the single elimination. It's not like this is the NBA Finals or a series where you have to play a team seven times. I mean, if St. Peter's played Kentucky seven times, I don't know how many times they could win. I don't know if they could win the series. I mean, hey, at this point, I don't want to count them out or disrespect them in any way, but maybe they win three times?
Maybe.
Maybe, right. If they play Purdue in a series, maybe they win three times, but you have the ability in a series to have off nights, to have
that margin for error that allows you to still win even though you slip up. Here's the crazy thing. So, Jared, what would you say the enrollment was for St. Peter's?
was 2,316.
You know how many wins North Carolina has all time in basketball? 2,321. North Carolina has more wins in the program's history than St. Peter's has enrolled students.
Now let that just sink in for a second. We need to like a moment aside, like pause.
That's insane. That is absolutely insane. More wins in the program than that school has kids enrolled.
I don't even know how to like counter that. Like how to just like.
If that doesn't tell you that like what the school has been up against, and Kentucky has more wins than North Carolina, I believe they were until last night, I believe, like the winningest program in college basketball.
Kansas actually beat them in not last night's game, but the game before, and yeah, I can't think of who they played.
Yeah, Kansas beat Creighton in the second round.
Yes,
yeah, to surpass them. So Kansas now has more wins, but Kentucky has more wins than North Carolina. So St. Peter's has already beaten a school that has more wins all time than in like student enrollment at their school. Like this is some Hoosiers type stuff here that we're dealing with. Like other schools weren't this small that came out to end up making runs like this.
Well, and Nick actually just texted me a nice little nugget too. Their next game against North Carolina, it's going to be in Philly, which if you know anything about the Northeast, Philly and Jersey, it's not a far commute whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
And you wonder, like, could they have people drive down just to come and watch it? Even people just from New York City who are like, I want to see this team perform in person. Plus, they're playing UNC. I mean, a little part of me is like, okay, I could see UNC beat them by 8 or 10 points.
Yeah.
But then that wouldn't surprise me. It would make me sad because I just have become fully invested in this St. Peter's team. But mm-hmm. then another part of me could see St. Peter's hanging with them for the entire game and beat them.
North Carolina had a crazy game last night against UCLA. Two yep. absolute powers. A North Carolina-UCLA game in the Sweet 16. And it lived up to the hype. Caleb Love would not let his team lose. He hit 6 threes, a lot of them down the stretch, scored 30 points. And now North Carolina gets to play St. Peter's for a trip to the Final Four. We'll break down that matchup. And we'll go ahead and tell you where we're leaning on it as you're listening to Courtside, Kamla Knezovic, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, yeah, a little Def Leppard bringing us back here. Courtside, Kamla Knezovic, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, there is one of my favorite Def Leppard song, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Pretty sweet song.
Oh, love that song.
And the Sweet 16 was pretty nice here these last 2 days. We've had some great games, including last night, North Carolina, UCLA. And because that's who St. Peter's gets to play next.
Yep.
We're in the fourth segment of our show here on 102.5 The Game. And I never in my wildest dreams thought I would kill an hour talking on the radio in my career talking about St. Peter's basketball. But that's what this run is all about. And that's the team they're playing next. North Carolina. North Carolina, 8 seed. Honestly, playing their best basketball here at the end of the season. They played UCLA last night, Michelle, and that's one thing that kind of got swept under the rug because of all the peacock mania that we're living with right now, is North Carolina and UCLA, hey, there wasn't a whistle blown in that game for the first, like, 8.5 minutes. It was sexy. Like, there was no referee interference.
We love that.
There was a flow to the game that we have not seen in college basketball this year. Both teams were hitting tough shots. It was a back-and-forth affair, and North Carolina ended up pulling away at the end because Caleb Love wouldn't let them lose. 30 points, 6 for 14 from 3, and it was an incredible game. Michelle, look at this North Carolina team that just at the end of the year that really turned things around. This is a team that in late January, early February, I thought was just done. I didn't have them. Like, I've been doing the bracketology stuff all year long.
Yeah.
It took until them beating Duke on the last weekend of the season for me to definitively put them in because they only had one quad one win at going into that game, and it was an unimpressive one. Because at that point in time, I didn't have Virginia Tech in. But that road win at Virginia Tech was their only quad one win. And then they followed that game up with a loss at home against a horrific Pittsburgh team.
Yep.
This North Carolina team really didn't have it all year long. And they've just – it's the definition of getting hot at the right time. And
It is. I mean, we talked about it.
They lost out.
They lost by 20 to Kentucky earlier in the season. They had some
we're not close
bad losses. We also – kind of disrespected the ACC because we were like, what that conference looks awful. Like, nobody looks elite this year, whereas it just took them a little bit of time, and they are peaking at the right time because, well, what do you know? They got three teams right now still in the tournament. Big Ten was wiped out last night. St. Peter sends Purdue home. Michigan got sent home the other day by Villanova. SEC has Arkansas repping them, which they will play Duke today.
Woo pig suey. It amazes me you've never heard that until like what, yesterday? You never heard the woo pig suey thing? You've went to college at UK, and you're now what, in year two, going into year two of living in Nashville? So you've lived,
and a sports fan,
you've lived in SEC country at least for 6 years. Like, I can give you a pass if you just came straight here from upstate New York. And, like, what is WPS? What are the noises these weird people are making at this games? These grown men with hog hats are doing during these games. But you've been in SEC country 6 years and never heard Woo Pig Suey. That is impressive.
The first time I heard the chant, it was in Tampa at the SEC tournament. And I watched that Arkansas team lose to Texas A&M. And I think I watched pretty much the entire second half. And Texas A&M was essentially up the entire time, had a nice lead.
Was never
but
that close.
Their fans there, whenever they hit a three, were doing this chant, and I was like, what is happening? So then when Arkansas won the other night,
hilarious.
I was like, what is that whoopee? I kept thinking like whoopee pie.
it's one of the weirdest things in sports.
Yeah.
Like, calling the Hogs is like one of the weirdest cult-like things in sports. Like, if you do that in any other setting, you think you are in some kind of cult that you might not live to see out of.
Yeah, it does scare me a little bit. But Woo Pig Suey, go Eric Musselman and
back-to-back Elite Eights.
And the Hogs. Didn't know that would happen. But flipping back to just, you know, UNC Peacocks, they play tomorrow. I mean, I just pulled up the stats just to look at the, you know, field goals. They're pretty much St. Peter's 23 out of 54, UNC 27 out of 60, kind of similar. UNC's got them on the three-pointers, free throws about the same, rebounds about the same, offensive rebounds about the same, defensive rebounds about the same, right? Assists, like, they're pretty much neck and neck. For St. Peter's has a slight edge on steals, slight edge on blocks, slight edge on turnovers, and slight edge on fouls. So, I mean,
there is a juicy pathway for St. Peter's to win this game. Because here's the thing. Like, what's the profile of a lot of the teams that they've already beaten so far? Those teams, like Purdue and Kentucky, elite offenses that can shoot, score at all three levels.
Yep.
Teams that are great offensive rebound teams.
Mm-hmm.
And what's this North Carolina team? A very good offensive rebound team. Armando Bacot grabbed 8 offensive rebounds last night. 8 offensive boards. This guy has been incredible. He's number 27 in the country in offensive rebound percentage. Armando Bacot alone grabs 14% of North Carolina's misses when he is on the floor. So they've already beaten Oscar Tshiebwe, the best offensive rebounder in college basketball.
National player of the year.
One of the greatest offensive rebounders in college basketball history. Zach Edey, a top 10 offensive rebounder in college basketball. Travion Williams, a top 10 offensive rebounder in college basketball. And now they have another elite-level offensive rebounder in Armando Bacot. And this team as well loves to shoot threes. Now, the thing with Purdue and Kentucky, they don't shoot as many. Kentucky was one of the least three-point happiest teams in college basketball. Murray State's wasn't a three-point happy team in college basketball. And Purdue, relatively speaking, isn't three-point oriented. Now, this North Carolina team loves to shoot the rock. Last night, almost half their shots were threes. They shot 31 threes, 35 twos. And that's kind of been like the whole point of their turnaround, right? They figured, hey, we can't get the ball inside. We're not going to a great interior scoring team. Let's just shoot it from the outside, see what happens. That's what happened against Duke. They killed Duke from the three-point line. That's what happened against Baylor. They got that 25-point lead against Baylor that they eventually blew and had to go to overtime and survive. They did that. They beat Baylor and got that lead because they just lit it up from the outside. Brady Manek is on a tear right now. RJ Davis shooting the ball really well. Caleb Love last night hitting 6 threes. I think 3 of them were in the last, like, 3 minutes.
They shot good.
they shoot the lights out. And when they see one go in, they are dangerous. But my favorite part about St. Peter's now, like after they've made this run, like their KenPom stats are a little inflated because a lot of it takes into account your opponents. But like the raw numbers don't lie. Teams only shoot 29% from three against St. Peter's. That's 15th best in the country. Teams shoot 36% of their shot portfolio as three-pointers against St. Peter's. North Carolina, for the entire year, is only at 38, which is a little above the NCAA average, which is 37. Lately, it's been closer to 45-50 in the last several games for
their
North
shooters
Carolina.
Have been hot for North Carolina, but the depth on their team
isn't much. They don't have a deep bench.
St. Peter's does. UNC doesn't. Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of players.
If UNC gets a little rattled and their shooters aren't hot like they have been in these last couple games, that could be a problem for them. I also have a quick little rant really quick because I know we do have to go to break. But for everybody who's a fan out there of Kentucky or Purdue or anything, of course I'm a Kentucky fan, so I'm seeing all this on my timeline. Stop saying that Kentucky should be in the Elite Eight right now because they shouldn't. They got outcoached and they got outplayed.
Yeah. Like every
Point
other
blank.
Team in this.
Point blank. St. Peter's deserves every bit to be where they are right now.
They've earned it. You don't get to this point if you don't earn it. And we talked a lot about conferences struggling. The ACC has three teams in the Elite Eight. The SEC has one, but they can knock out one of those ACC teams in a significant game. That is the nightcap tonight on, I believe, CBS. But we'll give you the info on that. On the other side is just in your courtside with Kamla Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 68 teams started this tournament on Selection Sunday just a mere 2 weeks ago, and we have been trimmed down to eight. Eight teams remaining, only one of which were number one seeds, and neither Gonzaga nor Arizona is that team. It's remarkable. And one of the reasons why Gonzaga, Arizona is not that team is because Arkansas took care of that as they upset number one overall seed Gonzaga. The Elite Eight tips off tonight. First game, Houston and Villanova. Houston knocked off Arizona. One of the two, I thought the Zags and Arizona are the two most complete teams coming into this.
Yep.
Neither make it to the Elite Eight because of Houston and Arkansas. And we've covered the SEC all season. Michelle Knezovic, I'm Elijah Campbell. And we've talked about the title potential in this. Like, Kentucky's good enough to win it all. Tennessee is good enough to win it all. Auburn's good enough to win it all. And we've had Arkansas in that group after January. Like, once February started and Arkansas started playing well and they started creeping into that regular season title discussion.
That Auburn win was big for
it
them.
It became a reality, yes. After the Auburn win, it was when I think we both were like, okay, they've collectively gotten it together. They were a team full of transfers, a team with a lot of roster makeover. You lost Moses Moody in the to the NBA draft. You lost a lot of other key pieces from last season's team to whether it be transfers or just graduation. But this Arkansas team has gotten it together and took down Gonzaga. We touched on it on the six a little bit, but Michelle, when you watch the Hogs, that game against Gonzaga was exactly a microcosm of what they have done all year long. They're not a great shooting team. J.D. Notte had a good offensive performance, but he also missed 20 shots. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't why they won the game. They won the game because they were able to get Gonzaga in foul trouble, and they were deeper as a forward unit. Now, Drew Timmy, Chet Holmgren are the two best forward duo in college basketball. But when you get one in foul trouble and make Anton Watson have to play a lot of minutes, you can bully them. And that's exactly what Arkansas did. They were more physical. They took away passing lanes. And they did what they've done to a lot of SEC teams this year, and that is keep themselves in the game and, despite shooting poorly, still being able to win because you are that good on the defensive end.
Well, and you could tell once Chet Holmgren fouled out for Gonzaga, then it was essentially all on Timmy. And Arkansas just smothered him.
That last play, yeah, where he had to get that. He's trying to shoot a layup to cut it to one in the last little bit. All they had to do, double converge and make that the toughest 7-footer that Drew Timmy's had to shoot all year.
It makes me think of, there's a great shot from, I think it was on the March Madness Twitter, of just the insane block from Arkansas, which essentially sealed the deal.
Yes, the Adiyi's Tony block. Got, kid's a freak athlete, by the way. Another key transfer that Eric Musselman got from Pittsburgh.
And we haven't talked also much about, you know, Eric Musselman, this is his back-to-back Elite Eight for this Arkansas team. In the SEC, I mean, yeah, like you said, we talked about Arkansas, but they kind of were like the fourth team. It was Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, and then, oh, Arkansas's the fourth.
They're the team that if you go to Arkansas and you're on a hot streak, you're going to lose your hot streak because of the raucous environment in that arena, and this, they've been a giant killer all year.
Well, and I think also as far as facing Duke tonight, Duke shot absolutely incredible at the end of that Texas Tech game. But
absolutely,
are you going to shoot 70% and 8 for 8 for your last 8 shots of the game every game? Eh, probably not.
It's happened 2 games in a row, but making it a third is going to be very difficult.
And I mean, I know they have all this momentum because it's K's last year, and a lot of talk around, you know, college basketball and just the sports world in general is, could Coach K win a national championship on his way into retirement?
That would be, I mean, that would be a hell of a way to end what might be the greatest coaching career in modern college basketball. I'll exclude John Wooden, modern college basketball.
And as much as it pains me to say this, and I know people out there, if you aren't a Duke fan, you hate them.
Oh, yeah. It's the most hateable team in college basketball. Has been for decades now.
And
it's their best quality, is their hateability.
You do have to give some props, though, for Coach K and what he has been able to do at Duke in his time. The amount of national championships he's won. And, like, we could never see a coach like that again.
Yeah, it's always hard to tell, but I mean,
think of a lower, like a younger coach coming up right now who at least has one national championship, who you think could have that many more in his career.
And like, because you have to start young, you have to win it, at least go to one in your first couple of years.
Essentially, like, probably not move around a lot, because when you move around a lot in coaching, it's hard to then, okay, now we got to get our recruits in and you got to get established. And that was one of K's, that was a benefit for K, right? He was at Duke for 40 plus years.
And like, here's the thing too, like that's been one of our favorite topics of conversation lately is how hard is it to win in this tournament? Like, some of the greatest coaches that we revere as Hall of Fame coaches, like Jim Boeheim, Tom Izzo, John Calipari, all have only one national title. Jay Wright has two now, but I mean, he went through many years where he couldn't get past the Sweet 16. And it's remarkable now, like Roy Williams is obviously in that class too, because he won, he's won several. But Coach K winning 5 is remarkable, and doing it in different eras of college basketball. When he won his first one in 92, it is a lot. Like, college basketball is a different planet in 1992 than it is when he won his last one in 2015.
With essentially a one-and-done team.
With essentially a one-and-done team with a couple seniors that weren't the focal points of that roster. It is amazing how much this entire sport has changed, and he has adapted and won during different eras of college basketball. You saw like people like Bob Knight, his mentor, couldn't handle whenever eras started to change a little bit. Bob Knight couldn't win at Texas Tech because Bob Knight couldn't reach the modern player. The game passed Bob Knight by, and it just never has to Coach K, and Coach K continues to win despite the ever-changing landscape of college basketball, which is astonishing.
Well, and it's not even just the coaching aspect, right? Let's take it off the field. Recruiting and being able to relate and reach these young athletes. They're 18 years old when you're trying to get them to come to your school. I mean, I know the transfer portal is just another layer now of college basketball transforming, which essentially just kind of really became big during the COVID year and has became a significant role. You look at this Arkansas team who won big in the transfer portal. Kentucky won big in the transfer portal. it allows you to get these other guys. But one of the benefits of Duke for so long was, and a lot of elite programs for so long was, okay, we recruit them when they're 18, they stay here for 4 years, there's no one and done yet, mm-hmm. and we're able to actually coach them for 4 years and build on that team chemistry, and they're together every day for 4 years. And those are traditionally the teams that you see win in March. You see these veteran teams. You don't see these one-and-done teams. But what Coach K has been able to do is adapt to that. And I can't mm-hmm. even believe we're giving him this much credit on our show right now, because
I bet this is killing you.
Yeah, it is absolutely killing me inside. But the fact of the matter is, you can be a Hall of Fame coach in college basketball, and you don't have to have five mm-hmm. national championships, because it's just so hard to do. Look at quarterbacks in the NFL. Philip Rivers is probably going to go into the Hall of Fame, and he didn't even win a Super Bowl. Somebody the other day tried to have the conversation with me, well, do you think Calipari's going to be in the Hall of Fame? He only has one national championship. I'm like,
he's been to Final Fours. He's been to multiple Final Fours with three different schools.
He was at UMass and had good players at UMass.
Yes. Like he went to Final Four with UMass, Memphis, and Kentucky. I don't know if there is another coach who's gone to Final Fours with three different schools.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, it is so hard to win these national championships, but people think it's easy because you see a coach like Coach K. He's like Brady. That is like my new favorite analogy. He's like Brady.
Just because he wins all the time doesn't mean other people aren't great for not winning the titles that he ends up winning.
And it's so hard.
It's hard.
And he's done it in different eras, too, like different eras of the game, like, mm-hmm. you know, more passing or more short shots.
Three-point oriented. Like, the three-point line and the exploitation of the corner three has changed basketball, not just college basketball, pro basketball. Like, the game, like I mentioned, like I was discussing the landscape of college sports in the 90s to compare to what it is now. The strategy of basketball is so much different in 1992 than it is this season. Like, there's so many different things. Like, Paolo Banchero would have been a center, and they would not have left the block back in 1992. Yeah. You'd have been what played the Christian Laettner role. You know, and the only time you're really shooting from the outside is
if we just say his name on air.
We did. And the only time that he would have ever shot outside or needed to shoot outside was when there's less than 2 seconds against Kentucky in the Elite Eight to try to get to a Final Four. That'd have been the only time you need him to shoot from the outside. But Paolo Banchero is like bringing the ball up the floor, is like running points sometimes. Like, he's doing a lot of things that just like big men couldn't do then. Like, the game is so different now, and Coach K still wins. And like what they did,
and he still makes everybody mad because he still wins.
Because he still wins. Like, here's the crazy thing too. It's like, when you hear a stat about them, because when they beat Texas Tech, it was remarkable to me because I thought Texas Tech was so good defensively that they would just throw Duke out of what they wanted to do. That's what Texas Tech does. That's what they've done all season. Mm-hmm. They're the number one defense in college basketball for a reason. And Duke put up 78 points on them, shot 71% from the field. So it's like, oh, that's got to be insanely fluky, right? That's what I thought when I heard that stat. I even watched the game, and there was a couple possessions where I'm like, that's not a great shot. Like, if you're Texas Tech, I feel like that's a win on that possession. But Shot Quality, one of my favorite analytics websites that covers college basketball, they track each possession, and if they grade each quality of possession based off where the shot was and who shoots it. Like, obviously, Colin Gillespie, a 41% three-point shooter, him shooting a three-pointer from straightaway is different than Zach Edey shooting a three-pointer from straightaway. Those two shots are not the same for those two players.
Hit it from three, Zach.
Exactly, yeah. Like that. Whenever, he has not attempted a three-pointer his entire career for a reason. And it's funny, like, they take the history of the player, the history of the shot, too. So it's like, what is the average NCAA shooter shooting from this spot on the floor with a defender this close to him? Like, it's a lot of, like, micro data kind of stuff. So they basically give out shot quality scores at the end of each game based off of the quality of shots you're getting. And for Duke had 78 actual points in the game. The final score is 78-73. The shot quality score, Duke, was 79-70. Their computer said that Duke's quality of shots were so good, they were expected to get one more point than they actually did. So them shooting 71% in the second half might be undershooting what they should have had in the second half.
Which is crazy.
They are figuring out how to get whatever shot they want against really good defenses. Michigan State was a really good defense. Texas Tech was the best defense. And they're still figuring out a way to get these shots against great defenses. Now, will they be able to do that against Arkansas? We'll answer that on the other side as you're listening to Courtside with Kamala Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. There's only one team from the SEC in our beloved Southeastern Conference where it simply just means more. There's only one team left in this tournament. However, that team is 40 minutes away from reaching a Final Four, and the only team in their way in those 40 minutes, the Duke Blue Devils. We just got done talking about Coach K's career. We just got done talking about how this offense has seemingly gotten what they've wanted against the best defenses in the sport, and that's exactly what Arkansas is rolling in to this gym, rolling into the Chase Center in San Francisco tonight when they play. And Michelle, it's not necessarily a clash of styles, but it's a strength-on-strength matchup. Mm-hmm. Arkansas, the number 11 defense in the country, according to KenPom. Duke has now moved up to number 2 on offense after their performance against Texas Tech. They were like number 6 before that game. They are now up to number 2, which is pretty remarkable. So the question is, and it's going to be the difference in this game, is Duke going to be able to get the shots they want against an Arkansas defense that has been engineered to make free-flowing offenses feel very uncomfortable?
See, I think this game is going to be determined by how tough Arkansas plays on defense, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've seen Duke earlier this season, if they can't get up the shots that they want, they have a couple shooters, right? A couple elite shooters.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're not falling, how else can Duke change their plan to win?
Mm-hmm.
Right? These last three games, we've seen them shoot tremendously.
The best they have all year from the outside.
But when you take a look at that Michigan State game, I mean, Michigan State was an all right team, and they could have beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Duke had that glorious win against Fullerton, which I just wish Fullerton took them down, but that's
the
another story.
The fighting E.J. Anasikis didn't have enough in them.
Another story for another day. But I think Michigan State allowed us to see a little bit of Duke's weaknesses, whereas, yeah, at the end of the game, they hit the last 8 shots, which, okay, you're going to win 99 times
when
out of 10.
Executing
like that towards the end of the game. But if Arkansas can shake them up a little bit and get them off this just hot shooting streak that they had and not allow them to get these open shots or these, you know, these shots that they want and make them take tougher shots, make them take uncomfortable shots, make Duke as a whole feel uncomfortable, I think that woo, pig, suey, call the hogs.
Call the hogs. Michelle might be calling the hogs for them to get to their first Final Four since 1994, or 1995, actually. That was the year they lost
before
the national
I was
title.
Born.
Yeah, that was the year I was born. So only 1 year in my lifetime have they been to a Final Four, and that was within the first month of my existence. But this matchup is juicy because of that. Like, Duke, while they are a really good three-point shooting team, they're a little below average in terms of the volume of threes they shoot. It's not exactly where their bread is buttered, but, like, when they're on, it's impossible to guard them because they're an elite two-point shooting team, and that's where I think the X factor for this Duke team is going to be Mark Williams. Mark Williams was, when I watched that game against Texas Tech, I figured Paolo Banchero necessarily wouldn't get every shot he wanted in that game. I felt like Wendell Moore probably wasn't going to be able to facilitate anything they wanted at any given time against that Texas Tech defense. I figured they were going to have to get enough stops from Theo John and Mark Williams' rim protection. And then if they are able to converge and actually get the ball into the middle of the floor, which Texas Tech's no middle defense is designed to keep the ball away from the middle of the floor. So how well do you play on the sidelines? How well do you shoot from the baseline? How well are you able to get the ball where you want it? And Duke loves to get the ball into the middle of the floor. A lot of that came from pick and roll actions from Jeremy Roach at point, who played all the point in that game and did a fantastic job facilitating in that game. He did lead the team with 5 assists in that game and made one of the more remarkable plays. A nice little dish pass to Paolo Banchero that he got an and-one dunk on, which kind of sparked Duke getting back in the game. But to me, Mark Williams, the big man down low, he had 16 points and about 8 rebounds in that game. But there's going to be chances where if they're going to be able to create separation on drives and they're able to get offensive paint touches, that Mark Williams is going to have to convert the bunnies, if you will. You can't miss the bunnies, the shots around the rim. If they're able to do that and they're able to kind of get past these Arkansas defenders on the dribble, they're going to have to rely on guys like Mark Williams or Theo John, whoever Theo John gets in the game. He only played 10 minutes, but against Texas Tech, it's funny, his offensive rating on KenPom was 206. It almost breaks the stat. They almost scored more than 2 points per possession when Theo John was on the floor in 10 minutes. Obviously not because of him, it's a team stat, but whatever. But when those guys come in, they need to be able to fill in that production. And Mark Williams, who did get 30 minutes in that game, needs to be not just a rim protector, because Arkansas, not a good three-point shooting team, one of the worst three-point shooting teams. It might be the worst three-point shooting team still playing in this tournament. But, man, when I watch this, like, Mark Williams is going to have to be able to make them a bad two-point shooting team in this matchup while also being able to convert the easy chances they do get. Because Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren were able to get shots around the rim. They weren't necessarily hitting the highest percentages of those shots around the rim, because when Arkansas converges on you down in the post, it can be a nightmare. Mark Williams is going to have to be a good safety valve if Duke's going to be able to win this game, and he's going to have to win the battle on the boards with Jalen Williams, which Gonzaga didn't necessarily do during the large part of that game. I mean, you look at the Arkansas-Gonzaga game. The Zags had a chance. They got a stop at the very end of that game to give them the ball back. But what did Audie's Tony do? Come in from the weak side, grab an offensive rebound, force the Zags to have to start fouling late. So to me, that's like the matchup I'm looking at here so far. But this one, the clash of styles, it's going to be a whole lot of fun to watch. Michelle, when you look at some of these other matchups, like tonight too, Houston-Villanova, what's your first initial reaction coming to that, especially considering what Houston did to Arizona in the Sweet 16?
My initial reaction to that is Houston is playing their best basketball right now, and I think Villanova is kind of subpar playing.
Solid. They just don't beat themselves, which is an admirable trait in itself, but it's like you watch them, and it's not like they're just hanging 90 on people.
No, you know? Which traditionally a Villanova team, you just see a very high-level offense team shooting or scoring 70-plus a game, whereas, I mean, the game the other day against Michigan was just not really pretty to watch, to be honest. Right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a beautiful offensive game like we saw from UCLA and UNC last night.
Yeah.
It's like, I just felt like the Villanova and Michigan, it was foul and stop. And I mean, Michigan was with Villanova for 30-plus minutes of the game. I mean, Villanova ended up pulling away at the end, but Michigan didn't even look that good when they played Villanova. Michigan looked tremendously better when they played Tennessee, and Dickerson was hitting everything he needed to, whereas he kind of fell flat in that Villanova game.
But yeah, that's why I was, and when you slow them down too, I feel like that was one thing about Michigan too. If you just slowed them down and you made Dickinson play one-on-one, sometimes like he's been doubled so many times in the last several months that he is anticipating a double team.
Yep.
And the one thing that Villanova can do is bring in guys like Eric Dixon or Caleb Daniels, like off the bench. Brandon Slater came off the bench, gave him 27 minutes and was there to play defense. Like, they have three forwards who are there because, like, defensively, Villanova is not the best defensively, but they have guys that are there to play these very specific defensive roles, and I think that was enough. So if you slow the game down and throw those kind of bodies at him that are competent enough to stay in front of him, he won't score 27 on you.
So it'll be Houston-Villanova and Arkansas-Duke tonight. Whoever wins that will play the winner of North Carolina-St. Peter's, Kansas, and Miami. ACC team to be in the Elite Eight.
Man.
The ACC came to play.
And I will still contest that was not a great league this year in the regular season.
Postseason, though?
I mean, what Miami's done, and like what Miami does too, it's really fun because what they do is really conducive to NCAA tournament play. When you are a good pressure team, sometimes you can wear yourself out in a 30-plus game regular season. When you're playing multiple games a week and traveling during those a ton, here in these kind of settings, like, Auburn had no answer for Miami's pressure. Jim Larrañaga, who was the coach for the George Mason team in 2006 that made that miraculous Final Four run, same coach, same philosophy, They just pressure you really well. And if you can't handle that pressure, you're going to turn the ball over and you're going to create fast break opportunities for Miami and Miami's best offense getting out in transition and beating you there and creating a tempo that you cannot keep up with. And the fact that they did what they did to Auburn and dictated tempo that much against a Bruce Pearl coach team who also likes to play at those tempos is miraculous to me. Like, that was an impressive showing.
Well, the only close game they've had in the tournament was against USC in the first round.
And USC, I thought, kind of blew their opportunity late in that
game. They ended up winning because Miami at the foul line. It was a tied game. They made their last two foul shots. Mm-hmm. And there you go. Time runs out. Miami moves on. Play Auburn, almost beat them by 20 points. 79-61.
It was in control.
And then Iowa State last night, 70-56. So Miami glided through those last two games.
Mm-hmm. And what I liked about Miami last night was that they didn't lose composure. Because like what Iowa State does better than any team in college basketball is like force turnovers. Like that's their whole MO. That's their knockout punch. They're in every game because they make a team turn the ball over 20 times.
We compare them to LSU.
Them and LSU are carbon copies of each other.
Essentially, everything we said about LSU, just translate that to Ohio State.
Combining Iowa and Ohio State.
Iowa State. Wow, words are hard this morning, Elijah.
They're very difficult. And like, here's the thing, too. Like, they still won the turnover battle and turned the ball over 14 times. Like, Miami didn't necessarily have, like, the cleanest game in that regard, but they had 21 team assists. Because they are a very mature team. That's another underrated part about this Miami team is they are pretty bleeping old for a college basketball team. They have like three dudes. Like Charlie Moore might be the third oldest player in the Memphis Grizzlies if you plopped him in today. They have some experienced college basketball players. This is Charlie Moore's fourth school, by the way. And he had 9 assists and 3 turnovers against the pressure happiest team in college basketball, against a team that was the best in forcing turnovers for most of the year and an elite defense. And that experience does
weigh a
lot.
March.
It definitely matters here more so than any other point in the season. And with a coach like Jim Larrañaga with a philosophy that is so conducive to winning in the postseason, it definitely helps get the results that they saw last night. So we'll go ahead and break down some of that too. Like, this Miami team's weird. It's very, very weird. But I want to get back into Houston and Villanova because it's going to be another thing too. With Houston being down their best scorer all season long and playing a team like Villanova who plays slower than any team in college basketball, we are truly going to have a style clash tonight in the first of two Elite Eight games. We'll dive into that and answer the question, can Villanova keep this game slow enough for them to win, or is this Houston team just the best team in college basketball playing right now? We'll answer that on the other side. It's just in the court side of the Kamla Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Two massive games tonight in the Elite Eight, and they are hard to pick. Clashes of styles, Hall of Fame coaches. There is a lot going on tonight, including the involving what I think is the coach of the year in Kelvin Sampson at Houston. I've been wearing my Phi Slamma Jamma Houston Cougars shirt.
Love it.
Not the last time they went to the Final Four. They went to the Final Four last year. But before that, the last time was 1984. And Michelle, it's crazy that out of all these NCAA tournament wins Houston has had since the Phi Slamma Jamma team with Akeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler, their win against their second round win against Illinois was the first time they beat a single-digit seed in the tournament since that team. They did not beat a single-digit team or seed in the NCAA tournament last year en route to a Final Four, oddly enough.
And, Elijah, one of our conversations during this tournament was, could a non-Power 5 team win it all? And what do we have here?
A non-Power 5 team is probably the best team remaining.
But two in the Elite Eight.
And two in the Elite Eight. I mean,
the ACC takes the other three spots. Then we've got Big 12, 3, 4. Who am I forgetting? ACC.
ACC's got 3. SEC's got 1.
Oh,
AAC
SEC.
Has 1. Yeah.
And then St. Peter's.
The MAAC has 1 team in the Elite Eight, which is pretty improbable. But the first game tonight, Like tonight, like you can't lose. Like you're leading off with Houston, Villanova, and then you have Duke, Arkansas.
Oh, great, the nightcap.
Like this is a very special night in the sport. But we'll go ahead and start off. We broke down Duke and Arkansas, and we'll go into Villanova, Houston a little deeper because I think right now this Houston team is the best team remaining in the field, and it's insanely remarkable how they're able to do this despite losing their leading scorer and what I thought was their best player in Marcus Sasser in late December, early January. Lost him with a toe injury. He has been out for the year, and they're still in this position.
Well, and I think the like key to this game tonight, which you touched on a little bit earlier, is just the different tempos and the fact that Houston has been able to make this run and adjust without their best player.
Mm-hmm. It was a big loss.
They've been able to have other players step up and been able to spread the wealth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, on here, I'm looking at their stats right now on the March Madness app.
And great app. It's been a very helpful app.
It's great because you can go on there, you can click the matchups. They have all the season stats, and I'm looking at Houston right now, and it says Carlton is 100% for three-pointers.
He's probably only shot a handful of them all year.
But still.
Is that on the year? I know Josh Carlton, 6'11 center, and has been like a key cog. Like he is a shot eraser. I love watching him play. Yeah, he's 100% on the season, one for one.
Oh.
He has attempted one three-pointer on the season, and he is shooting
100%. I was trying to find that because when you look at, like, sometimes when you look at that, you don't see that a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait a minute. Okay, one for one. JK, then we're just going to run that one back.
He is one for one for his entire career. In his 4 years at UConn, he did not attempt a single three.
Huh.
He is one for one this year. He should not shoot one the rest of the season. Josh Carlton, he should end his career, whether that be in this Elite Eight game against Villanova or in the Final Four National Championship game. You always end on a make, and if he never shoots another three this season, he will end his career at 1,000 or a 100% three-point shooter, batting 1,000.
There you go, one for one.
Incredible. But he's one of the reasons why this team has been so good, too. He's had to step up. Everyone's had to step up, whether it be him or Jamal Shedd, who was remarkable in the game against Illinois and in the Houston game. Like, they needed more guard scoring because that's what they lost with Marcus Sasser, and Jamal Shedd has picked that up. You know what you're getting out of Fabian White, a key player on last year's team. Taze Moore is the he's the energy guy on this team. Like, he's the one who's a great defensive guard. He can guard almost all five positions, and he's the one who makes the hustle plays. Like in that Illinois game, ball's going out of bounds, almost clearly about to hit the announcer's table, and he runs, hustles, jumps, grabs the ball, slings it in bounds to a teammate. I can't remember if it was Kyler Edwards or Jamal Shedd, but it was another guard, or maybe Reggie Chaney, I can't remember, but saves it from going out of bounds. Player gets it, dunk on the other end. And like, it's energy plays like that this Houston team does all the time. They're the most physical team in college basketball, and like, athleticism from top to bottom, might be the most athletic team in college basketball. Like, they're just a headache.
Well, and I'm looking right here too, they have depth on the team, which is great for Houston, especially in a tournament like this, because I mean, we've talked about it all year, right? So they've got about 9 players who play 16 or more minutes. Right, so you obviously have your 30. You have your 30-minute players. There's a couple 20s in there, and then you've got 16, which is a great. And if you can have a role player who's in there for 16 minutes, who can help a starter sit down for a second and catch their breath, talk to coach on the side if you don't have any timeouts left or something like that. That is a big advantage. They're athletic and they have a lot of players who can play at the level they want them to. It's not like there's a big drop off once you get to the sixth man on the bench, whereas you look at Villanova.
They do not have that kind of depth.
No,
that's like a solid
five-man
rotation. Brandon Slater will come off the bench and give them some minutes. He doesn't play a ton of them. When you look at Villanova all year long, like, they're one of the bottom in the country in terms of like bench minutes. They rank 320th in the country in bench minutes.
Well, and then you play that into just being able to be a versatile team.
They play their way, and that's like the biggest thing too, is like, they impose their will on teams because they want to play slow and they want to play a very specific way.
And if they can make this Houston team play the way Villanova wants to play, which I do not think that'll work out very well. I'm very heavy on Houston for this game just because I think we've seen – I mean, first off, we both said I think they're the best team in the country by far performing right now. And if they can continue that, they just have so many options, right? Mm-hmm. So we've seen Villanova win playing their way. You know, they got their five guys. They've made it to the Elite Eight. But then you see Houston, so many different options, so many players in and out. We've seen them win that way too. It'll be interesting. I don't think that Villanova will be able to slow Houston down.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard because of the way Houston plays defense too. It's so in your face. They won't sit back and let you. Like, Michigan isn't a trapping defense. They're not a defense that like wants to pressure you a little bit.
Yeah,
I feel like Houston's like athleticism almost forces you to. And it's not like Villanova's slow. I don't want to say Villanova's slow. I know like a friend of mine who coaches in D1 college basketball. We've had this discussion multiple times where Colin Gillespie is not slow. He is just in control. And it makes him look slow. Everyone on this Villanova team, they're not slow players. They're all very in control. Like, watch them a lot. Like, when they drive to the basket, they will jump stop and land on 2 feet. And it's not because they're not, like, trying to dunk on anybody, but, like, they're in control and giving themselves options. They do a lot of subtle things like that that prevent them from turning the ball over. There's a reason they're the most careful team in college basketball with the ball. Like, they're only turn the ball over on 15% of their possessions. That's top 28 in the country in that category.
Gotta handle the rock.
They handle the rock perfectly. They don't beat themselves. And, like, that's the thing, too, is they're so fundamentally sound. They almost look slow because of it, but they're not slow.
Well, and I think that was a very important part for you to point out, because when people hear slow, they hear, oh, like, they think, like,
they're not athletic. Yeah.
They're physically a slow, sluggish team. Whereas Villanova knows what they're doing. It's a tactic. It's a way that they allow themselves to be in control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Especially against teams that are better than them. I'd rather if I'm playing, you know, like a really good example was on the Underdogs podcast, a really good podcast. I need credit Tom Haberstroh for teaching me this, like explaining like a good slowdown philosophy and why it works, is because if you're playing a team that's better than you, or if I'm playing one-on-one against Michael Jordan or LeBron James, I'd rather play them to a score of 1 than playing them to 21, because if I give him more margin for error, he's going to beat my rear end into submission. But if I can luck into scoring the first point and we're playing to 1, then I give myself a chance. That makes Villanova upset prone. That also, in a game like this against Houston, where Houston, I think, is clearly the better team. And I think we've kind of established that Houston is probably the best team that's in the field right now.
Yep.
If you're playing a team like that, your best option is to limit the number of possessions. And where Villanova is so good on a per-possession basis, Houston is too. However, if you make it to where you're comfortable, then your chances increase.
Take the entire shot clock, right? Set up your play. Know where you're going. Rather than you see so often in college basketball, just rushing to the hoop sometimes. And yeah, it works when you drive. And sometimes that's your team's game plan. And it works and you drive to the hoop and you make it. We saw Kennedy Chandler for Tennessee. It worked for Tennessee the other day when they were playing Michigan. Kennedy Chandler went off. He was driving to the hoop every time. But when you only take 10 seconds to make that basket, okay, took 10 seconds out of the game. Now you got another 30. And if they take the whole, like, you're just running down the clock. And they have the ball in their hands more often, especially when you get late in the game. You want the ball in your hands, obviously. But late in a game, do we think that Villanova could speed it up if they need to?
It would be hard. And here's the thing, too, is Houston, I forget, like, because Houston, they physically play fast, but their possessions are long. So technically, when you look at the number, it's like, yeah, they rank in the bottom 40 in terms of pace of play, too. They also play lower technically possession games, but their strategy is they want to move you around to where it confuses you, to where the shots you're taking are bad shots. Villanova is wanting to be in control and dictate the tempo because they like and still move a little slower, a little more methodically. And be in control more so than being slow. So it's two teams that take a long time in their possessions, but they go about it pretty differently. So they it, on paper, it's a similar style. But when you watch it aesthetically, it's different in terms of how they get that done. They achieve those long possessions in different ways. That's like a really fun, nerdy thing of basketball that I love, is how teams dictate pace of play. And these two teams play technically slower paces in very different ways. So from an aesthetic standpoint, that's like the one thing I'm really going to be watching tonight.
And that is why Elijah eats, sleeps, and breathes college basketball.
He's obsessive.
And sometimes he will throw these random games or stats out at me, and I'm like, I love me some college basketball, but damn. So with that being said, Elijah's his little math lesson for us on college basketball.
There is pace and tempo 101 in college basketball. Professor Campbell is now done. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. But
well, Professor Campbell, it looks like it's about time. We're going to pick our final four, and then after we head to break, we are going to give you some picks on the spread. So right now, see, this is easy for me. I know my final four. Arkansas, Houston, two games tonight. Arkansas beats Duke tonight. Houston beats Villanova. They will be heading to the final four on my dime. Well, not on my dime, on my, like, on my bracket.
You're paying for him to go to the final four.
I am definitely.
I didn't know
not.
You had it like that, Michelle. Oh, I didn't know your bankroll was like that.
Oh, I don't. I think Miami upsets Kansas. And are you ready for this?
Jim Larranaga back in the final four.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
The St. Peter's Peacocks, they're going to the final four. They're going
to
New Orleans.
Yes.
They're going to New Orleans, baby.
Yes,
Elijah,
the disco turkeys. You got, they're a peacock. You got to let them fly.
They're
flightless birds are going to fly. Oh, I love it. See, I'll go a different way, though. I think we're going to get a Duke-North Carolina Final Four.
Would be amazing, too.
The consolation in the stars here makes it kind of feel that way. I think we have a Duke-North Carolina Final Four on one side, and I'm anticipating a Houston-Kansas on the other side. However, I like where your head's at with Miami, because Bill Self is
Jim Boeheim's twin.
Is susceptible, is very susceptible to that Elite Eight loss. I have seen it happen so many times, and it'd be so cool to see Jim Larranaga back in the Final Four. I just can't pull the trigger on three ACC teams in the Final Four in the year of our Lord 2022.
True. I didn't even realize I'd pick that.
That would be remarkable, but we'll go ahead and tell you how we think they're going to do against the spread tonight and tomorrow. The most important stuff, actually, as sports gambling is legal in our great state of Tennessee. Our second-to-last edition of the Give & Go this season here on Courtside with Kamala Knezovic, next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment here on Courtside with Kamala Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and you know what that final segment means. It's time to Give & Go with some of our gambling picks of the week, and only two more of these. We have the Elite Eight this weekend, Final Four next weekend, and we know what we can make a special one on Championship Monday for some props. I feel like we can do a specialized segment there for some props for the one game, even though it's only the one game, but it would be
send-off. We'll do some props. We'll do Doug over on everything.
Yes.
When he makes it to the
all
national
Doug
championship.
Eater props. Yes.
Do you love how I'm just on a first name basis with him?
He's just Doug now.
He's just Doug. If you don't know who Doug is when I say Doug, go look on Twitter.
We were sent a meme from Ryan here at Ryan Burke, one of our sales staff here at Cromwell Media, sent a very good meme. It said, "You just lost to Doug." Shout out for that meme. That was good.
And Caroline Fenton, right before that, just said, "Good morning to Doug and only Doug."
And only Doug. It is Doug Eatert's world this week. We are all just participating.
Well, listen, Ricky just tweeted at us, and he is listening from Vegas, and he already won.
Okay.
He already won some money.
He's on a roll. I did see he is up some.
Well, we hope you can win some more money, Ricky, because we're giving you some gambling picks, picking on the spread. We'll start with tonight's game, Elijah. Arkansas, Duke. It's going to be a 7:49 tip-off. We'll start with the first game.
Yeah, I'll go chronological order.
Houston, Villanova, 5:09 tip Central Time.
Not a minute before, not a minute
not
after.
A minute before, 5:09.
That ball
after.
Is up in the air at 5:09.
On the dot.
The ball
on
is
the dot.
Tipped. Maybe that'll be the one for one shiny moment. Maybe that'll be the tip.
It could be.
Okay, Houston is favored, Elijah, by 2.5. The over is 127.
Ooh.
I This one was personally easy for me. I'm hammering Houston at the 2.5. I think they win this by about 5 or more.
Yeah, I'm going with that too. I think Houston pulls away. I think they're going to be neck and neck for a while. And we talked about in the last segment about these teams playing low possession games. I think it might speed up towards the end, especially if Houston starts to pull away. They play slower possessions in a small amount of possessions, but they're very efficient. It is very high points per possession, especially on Villanova's side, because they are one of the 3-point happiest teams in college basketball. So I like the over on that as well. 127 is a very low number. It's a number that is taking into account the amount of possessions that are going to be played. I think these teams are very good shooting teams. Kyler Edwards for Houston especially has been shooting the rock better than he has all season long. Texas Tech transfer who has played in a Final Four. He has Final Four experience because he was a starter on that Texas Tech team that took Virginia to overtime in the national championship in 2019. Great shooting teams, great three-point shooting teams. Even in a low amount of possessions, if you give me the number 127, I like the over on that. I like Houston to cover that spread as well.
I think we are on the same page with that. I like the over. I like the over as well. Puts it at about 63 points. That's about the half of 127. That's definitely low. We've seen a lot of low-scoring games in the tournament so far, but I think this will be definitely a higher into the 70s, 80s, I personally think, for Houston Villanova. Okay, moving on. The game that I just got so excited, I wanted to start with it. 749 tip, Arkansas-Duke. Duke is favored by 4, even. The under-over is 147.5.
Ooh.
I'll let you go first on this one, Elijah.
I picked Duke to win the game, but I think Arkansas is going to keep it really close. If you give me 4 points, especially if it's 4.5, if I can get the hook, I like Arkansas to at least cover that. I think it'll be a one possession game, just because that's how Arkansas plays a lot of teams, especially top teams. They play them very close. Duke is not great at covering a lot of these. They have not been a cover machine this season, so to speak. However, I still believe they win this game. I have a really good feeling that they do end up winning this game. So I'll take Arkansas to cover. And then in regards to the over-under, 147. That's tough.
Puts it at about 73. 73 is about the half.
Yeah, good math. I couldn't do that on the top of my head. You know what? Life's too short. Give me the over. I don't feel great about it, but life's too short not to. So
there we go.
When in doubt.
A big ol' YOLO.
Very 2011 of me.
I'm going opposite on this one, Elijah. You know I picked Arkansas to get to the Final Four. We did our Final Four picks just a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Plus 4. I think Arkansas gets the win in this game. I think they cover the 4. I'm going to go under, though. I think this is going to be a little bit of a lower scoring game in the sense of I don't think Duke is going to be as efficient from the 3. Mm-hmm. As they have been in the last couple games we've seen them. Okay, moving on. I'm so much more excited for these games.
These are the juicy ones.
St. Peter's, anytime somebody says St. Peter's, I just get so excited. But I will not get ahead of myself in this one. Our Sunday matchup, Miami-Kansas, going to be a 147 central tip. Kansas is favored by 6. Over-under is going to be the same, 147.5. Elijah?
I am going to go Miami to cover. I like Miami to cover that. I think it will be like Kansas and Creighton is the perfect microcosm of like what Kansas can be. They definitely play with their food a little bit. They don't cover larger spreads, at least from the games I've really gotten to zero in on that angle on. They should have beaten Creighton by double digits. They survived in advance. They were up double digits on Providence last night. Yep. They were covering for most of that game, and Providence
made it
very
interesting
late. Don't remind
me because they killed my parlay by 2 points.
Kansas does that, and I love how Miami is playing defensively. I love, like I mentioned in the last segment, I love how Jim Larrañaga's defenses play in these settings. I think they keep it close. I'm feeling an under on this one. I'm underwhelmed with how these offenses might be playing down the stretch.
Elijah, I'm going to go same thing as you. I think Miami easily covers the spread. I have them winning this game. I'm going to go under, though, too. And finally, last but certainly not least, St. Peter's, North Carolina, Sunday, 4:05. I will be hosting an event at Kung Fu Saloon.
Be so much fun. Show out, people. Show up.
I wish Elijah could be there. We're doing a pop shot contest where it's a little basketball game. Going to be watching some college hoops.
Love pop shot.
So come on down, and I will be hyped for the St. Peter's game. That is at 4:05 Central. North Carolina is favored by 8.5. Hammer the St. Peter's plus 8.5 for me.
Hammer it.
Hammer it for me.
The disco turkeys. Oh, I love it too.
Under over is 136.5.
I am going to hammer the 8.5.
Hammer
for St. Peter's. I think North Carolina wins.
Stop disrespecting the Peacocks.
Here's a fun stat. 15 seeds are 0-0 against the spread in the Elite Eight. Because it's never happened. So we have no historical precedent to allude to. But I do like them to cover 8.5. They just play a type of game that's going to keep them in it because they are that good defensively. And that's why I will also take the under as well. I think it's going to be an in-the-mud game. I just trust North Carolina to be able to make some of those shots later in the game to be able to eventually pull away.
Elijah, I agree with that too. I'm going to take the under as well. St. Peter's is scrappy defensively. I think they hold North Carolina, and you guys know what I think. I think the Peacocks are flying to New Orleans. I pose the quick question before we send you all on your way today and go watch some college basketball. Can St. Peter's make it to the Final Four?
I want to quote Al Michaels. Do you believe in miracles?
Oh, I believe in miracles, Elijah.
It is an astounding yes, that game on Sunday. Everybody, enjoy Elite Eight weekend. We only have two more weekends of college basketball. Buckle up. It is going to be a ride, and we will be here with you to discuss all of the action and give you all the insight here on Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.